Roles of Philosophy and Experience. As we begin to think about the true nature of things, it is helpful to have a foundation in the form of an idea or structure. Quantum physics was mentioned for this reason, offering a modern scientific model of emptiness underlying our physical universe. The ancient philosophical traditions of the East concur with this view, with an additional component added: the presence of consciousness in absolute emptiness and emerging from it. While it may not be possible to verify that the emptiness underlying everything is conscious, we can certainly verify that what manifests from emptiness is conscious, because we are conscious. Ancient Eastern philosophy, and some Western philosophies also, hold emptiness to be the great self of all, and that all individual selves are but rays emanating from the one great self, much the way waves dance on the surface of the ocean, only to dissolve and reappear on the surface of the ocean again and again. The waves are ever-changing expressions of the great oceans they dance upon. Whether the great ocean of emptiness beyond the manifested universe is conscious can be debated. But there can be little debate about whether human beings are conscious. It is this singular fact that underlies the entire field of self-inquiry. There is a vast theoretical body of knowledge which can be found in the amply documented philosophies of both the East and the West, plus the experiential component of consciousness which can be found in every human being. Put these two together, and you have the beginnings of self-inquiry. It is really quite simple. If we can come to know that we are, in fact, the ocean, before, during, and after we are the wave, then the inquiry is done. Enlightenment is ours. Philosophically, that is called the end of knowledge. In the East, it is called Vedanta, the end of the Veda. But, experientially, it is not so simple. Something more is needed, which is often overlooked by those who hold an uncompromising view of human enlightenment. If our experience does not fulfill their experience, then the inquiry is not complete. While purists may hold that only emptiness exists, it is up to each of us to verify the truth for ourselves. It is for this that the methods of self-inquiry are given. But it turns out that self-inquiry is very much a moving target, depending on the person who is doing it. Just as certain ideas will resonate with some people and not others, the methods of self-inquiry may resonate with some practitioners and not with others. The reason for this variation is due to the inner condition of each individual nervous system. The degree of inner purification and opening deep inside has a direct bearing on the degree of consciousness that is available in the person for gaining knowledge of the nature of existence, at least insofar as knowledge can be gained through direct experience within the individual. The key factor in this is the presence of what we call inner silence, also called pure bliss consciousness, the self, or the witness. It is called the witness because stillness in our awareness is our ground state, and, once established, is capable of experiencing all thoughts, perceptions, and emotions as objects outside its own unmoving awareness. The presence of the witness changes the complexion and effectiveness of all self-inquiry methods dramatically, and our perception of everyday living also. What had been a moving target becomes steady, and the very knowledge we have been seeking is what we become. We were that all along, and the witness is that. There is the old saying that what we are seeking is what is doing the seeking. Our inner awareness in the form of the witness is both the goal and the means for attaining it. The witness can be cultivated in human beings by engaging in self-inquiry. This is its purpose. However, it is very difficult to do it using self-inquiry as the sole means. Ask anyone who has tried without using any other supporting practices. A much more effective way to cultivate the witness is with daily, deep meditation. Once this kind of cultivation is occurring on an ongoing basis, then self-inquiry will have the ability to gain some real traction in our lives and add far-reaching additional benefits that could not be realized with either deep meditation or self-inquiry alone. When we say traction, we mean the formation of an intimate relationship between our native consciousness and the objects of this world, including our thoughts, feelings, and perceptions of the external environment. Our abiding inner witness, combined with self-inquiry, can lead us steadily toward a condition of oneness, beyond the ups and downs of life, even as we are fully engaged and going about our business each day. In this condition, there is not grasping or hanging on. So, if we are looking for real self-inquiry, we should look beyond the dictums of rigid philosophical systems to the inner workings of our own nervous system. If we do that, we will go beyond ideas to the experience itself. Then the wave will know itself to be the ocean, even as it continues as a wave. Philosophy is therefore a stepping stone to the greatest knowledge, which is direct knowledge of ourself.